Today's program was brought to you by Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we're exploring interactions from drug studies in a laboratory.
If this effect is as big as he's saying, somebody should have discovered this long before he did.
To global wisdom on avoiding hangovers.
Beber cerveza antes de tomar vino no previene los
síntomas. Bière sur vin et venin, vin sur bière et belle manière.
Beer before wine, you're going to be fine. Wine before beer, you're going to be queer.
To the novel recipes developed by an Indian-American family deep in the heart of Texas.
And then my mom's sort of coming to America and learning that white parents love to melt cheese on things to get their kids to eat it. She was like, this is genius.
Be sure to subscribe to Meat in Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's May 7th, 2019. Today's show is the State of New York State Beer. I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host here at Heritage Radio Network. We've got a great studio in the back, Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. If you ever take the L train out to Morgan Stop, come on over every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. We are back here. We've got some great guests today. A big change has happened in the world of craft beer since even, you know, 8-9 years ago. New York State's been the leader in being innovative about changing laws and promoting the development of the craft beer industry. I can't believe how far we've come. And the guests that we have, we're going to talk about that story a little bit and kind of tell you where the state of New York is right now. Let's just go around the room. Everyone will introduce themselves.
How's it going? Jason Saylor, Strong Rope Brewery.
And Jason, you've been one of the leading New York City brewers who's really doing the New York State farm brewing thing.
Yeah, working on it. I mean, we use 100% New York ingredients in all of our beers and trying to push that on our small two-barrel brewery down in Gowanus.
No, and it's great to have you on. And the guy who's helped change everything.
Yeah, not me. I'm Paul Leone, the executive director of the New York State Brewers Association.
And so, Paul, we're going to talk about from when you first came on, the changes that have happened in how many years has it been? 5 years now?
It's approaching 6 years in June. So when I started, there were 135 breweries in New York State, and I think today we're at 447, maybe 447. So it's hard to keep count. So we literally are opening a brewery one every week.
That's great. And then
Stefan Fleming, I work for Empire State Development. I run the one-stop shop for the craft beverage industry.
So people trying to open a brewery, they give you a call?
Yep, trying to open a brewery. They have questions about licensing, permitting. Hey, can I do this? Can I not do this? Am I breaking the law? Really, a whole host of questions for the entire craft beverage beer industry, wine, beer, spirits, and cider.
So let's take a little step back. In 2012, Governor Cuomo organized a craft beverage summit for craft beer, cider, spirits, and wine. And from that, a lot of things happened. Laws changed. Farm craft beverage laws were passed. Let's talk about that, because that was kind of a seminal moment, 2012, 2014. So much has changed since then.
Yeah, I think the interesting part is I came in 2013, and just to give you a little background, the association, or this version of it, and I'm happy to go back to emphasize on that a little bit or elaborate on that a little bit, but this version of it started in 2003, and really... The nine board of directors at that time was to change the laws in New York State. That's all they focused on. Before, nobody worked for them. It was just, how do we change the beer laws? And then you get to 2012 and you get, you know, Andrew Cuomo, and you get, you know, a really very favorable, a lot of laws have been changed and a lot of favorable legislation. You get an industry that starts to grow, craft beverage, craft beer becomes a thing. And here we are.
And then Jason.
Yeah, I mean, we started doing our developing our business plan around 2011, 2012. So we actually shifted as soon as we heard about the farm brewery stuff and the kind of emphasis on what was going to happen to using New York State ingredients and kind of haven't looked back since. So we've kind of developed, and when we officially opened in 2015, we were using 100% New York hops and about 90% New York malts, and I've just been trying to kind of increase that ever since and getting on to panels and talking to brewers and getting out there to try to promote that as much as possible to help kind of engender and fuel the entire farm side and the ingredient side to the rest of the craft breweries that are interested in kind of pursuing that that take on things.
Yes, the farm brewery license and the farm cidery license were created under Governor Cuomo, and they were modeled after the farm winery license, which Governor Cuomo rightly saw showed an increase in vineyards across the state, and he saw the connection between the value added to the grapes that are already being grown here and being grown well, and he asked the question, why can't this be done for beer? Why can't this be done for cider? And the answer is very easy. It can be. So trying to add value to these agricultural products and make it so there's a connection between the land, the farm, and the local pub, the local establishment. And it's not just for farm brewers, though, or for the farm licensees. The governor's been very focused on making it easier for all craft beverage producers to be able to do business more easily in New York State.
Great. And Paul, since you've joined, how has the association evolved? You know, you're doing festivals. You're seeing, New York City have its own Brewers Guild.
When I joined the association, I think there was like $687 in the account or something, and they a bunch of brewers chipped in some money and said, "Here you go, you got to grow this. You know, put it in the ground and grow the money tree." So, you do that by doing events, and it's a nonprofit. You know, that's what we are, and so it was just me in 2013, and now there's two full-time staff people and a part-time person, and the industry is, and we could probably hire more at this point, but we're number two in the country, I think, or pretty darn close in number of breweries. We're number three in economic impact. I mean, we're a player right now in New York State. So the change has been mind-blowing. I'm a little grayer. I have a little less hair. I'm a lot fatter. So things are good, Jimmy. Thanks for asking.
I'm glad. Well, one reason I asked you to come on is that there was the recent Governor's Cup. And tell me about that, because that's really grown a lot. I know some breweries like, I think, Strong Rope, KCBC, Prison City upstate, all won awards.
We created a beer competition, and we made it, the standard really is the Great American Beer Festival, right? I mean, that's what, you win a Great American Beer Festival medal, and you really feel like you're the best in whatever class that is. And so we created a beer festival, not just to give out medals, but we made it GABF hard. If you don't score the points, you don't get a medal. And so this year we had seven no medals. And the Governor's Cup is the best in show. We've got, best brewery. And we did it for a couple of reasons. The main reason was we really want to start shining a light on New York State beer. We're not in the national conversation. When you talk about great beer states, right? Everybody's like, oh, California, Colorado, Vermont, Washington. And I'm biased, of course. But, you too have been around this state. I would put our beer against any other state in the country. We just don't have the marketing. We don't have and so the competition was one of those things where it's like, okay, let's make it really hard. If you win a medal, let's have a Governor's Cup to it. If you win a medal, it's great marketing in a lot of ways. And we get a lot of press, and it's sort of the underlying idea of it is to, like, hey, look at us. Like, look at these award-winning breweries in New York State.
Well, I'll tell you what's cool, what we've all been part of, whether you're a home brewer like Jason was, going back when we started the show 10 years ago, I remember it was something like really hard to find, like a Russian River from California was what people talked about. And then it was Vermont breweries. And now the last few years, outside of New York, people are trying to get other half threes, in terms of like what's in demand and what people really talk about. So you're right about that. Jason, for you as a brewer, a New York City brewer, how do you interact with the Brewers Association?
Well, I mean, one big thing is I'm actually the board member for the New York City region. Out of what, the 11 regions?
There are nine regions. Nine regions and two at-large seats. There are 11 board members.
Okay. Yeah. See, I knew something.
Yeah, you knew that. You're new. You're the new kid on the block. You just got elected.
So I'm representing the city on the association. And I try to take part in the festivals that we put on, and I've been to almost all of them since we've joined, and been like opened up the brewery. And so, you know, because for me, I think it's very important for the breweries to be part of the association, to the more that we can work together, and I tell this to both the hop farmers and the malt houses as well, but the more that you can work together in your industry, the better you have a voice in wherever it is. If it's Albany, if you're putting out, wherever, like you have a better voice, and you can work together, and you can create a better industry overall. So it's important for, people to be a part of it. And we try to, at Strong Rope, try to take part as much as possible. I think it's, good to get out there and, be a part and act as a part of your association.
So a big part of what changed in New York was that small breweries could open tap rooms. Who wants to talk about that?
I mean, yeah, it's been a huge thing for
the Craft Act.
What was that, 2014?
The Craft Act.
Yeah, the Craft Act is what made it so you could serve by the glass.
So think about that statement, right? I mean, what could you do before that? Not serve by the glass in the tap room.
Right.
That really wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, you could do little tastings. People would get around that by doing, buy this bag of chips and we'll give you a glass of beer along with
it. My favorite one was you could buy the glass.
Oh, yeah.
And we would fill it. Yeah, so.
Some places you could actually buy a token as well.
Right.
this allowed people to be able to not only manufacture the product, be able to sell it by the glass out of their tasting room connected right to their brewery. And that's where they're getting the most of their return. And it's great because the places that they're setting up shop, where they're setting up their breweries, are, well, frankly, they're all over the state. They're in every part of the state, but they're in these old, beautiful industrial buildings in the Hudson Valley. They're in these spots along the Finger Lakes that have these beautiful vistas. And here in New York City, again, with all these old industrial buildings, people want to come hang out at these places. They're cool places. They are revitalizing the neighborhoods that they're in because it's a place to come and hang out, place to walk around, and it increases the foot traffic in every single neighborhood that these breweries are going into.
And I love that. Where your brewery is. Like, it just feels it's like in a neighborhood, like it's an apartment right next door. Like, it's in a neighborhood, and it enhances the neighborhood, like having your brewery there.
It demystifies the whole idea that brewing is this industrial process that you have to like see from afar, and there's giant vats and things. Like, you come to our space, we're a two-barrel brewery. People can walk back there and see it. We do tours, and it's very much like, it's almost like a kitchen type of thing. And we create this third space, and we wouldn't be where we are. We couldn't have stayed the size that we are for the 3 years if we weren't able to sell pints directly to consumers, because that, otherwise we would have had to grow. All breweries were growing or started out really large so that they could get those economies of scale. And having being able to sell pints directly to consumers allowed us to bring back the idea that breweries could be neighborhood little joints.
I think the old days, the threshold was, I think Brooklyn Brewery said this years ago, that before you had tap rooms, you had to produce at least 10,000 barrels of beer to actually pay your bills as a distribution model. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty, I mean, cheers to that, because these little things add up. I've been reading about the next show. We're doing a show at 6 as well with Jeff Allworth about the Widmer Way, and hearing about Oregon's craft beer scene starting from the 80s, a big thing that they changed was there was a two-tier system where a brewery could distribute as well as, but they couldn't do retail at the same time. Mm. There's a three-tier system, which is what, Stefan? You can tell us what the three-tier system is.
Yeah, the three-tier system is your brewer, your distributor, and your retailer. And basically, they all kind of worked hand in hand. That's another thing that the governor changed. A brewer is allowed to to be a self-distributor, to make their product, to all, sell it out of their tap room, but also to self-distribute to local bars and restaurants if they so choose. Again, as Jason said, these economies of scale, it's giving people a chance to start out smaller and to kind of do things a little bit more their way and build up at their own pace. And hopefully eventually Jason will be, you know, one of the largest breweries in the city and you know, creating hundreds of thousands of barrels of beer every year.
It's in his business plan.
Yeah, that's totally my plan. Page three.
I'm fortunate enough from my perspective where I get together a handful times a year with my counterparts, the other executive directors. And we're all, believe it or not, I'm a veteran at 6 years. Like, I'm the old guy in the group now. There's a lot of 1 year, 2 year EDs. And I sit and I listen to them lament about all of the crappy laws in their states. And I think about how good we have it here. Yeah. And I think that we really are one of the most liberal states in terms of laws and making it easy for craft beverage. And without question, we are.
So let's talk about what are, you don't necessarily have to mention the states, mm-hmm. but what are some laws in other
Alabama.
States?
Sorry, what? Okay.
Tell us a couple of the laws in other states that are holding people back.
You know, I think Alabama just got last year the ability to sell out of their tap room. Like, that was a thing. Self-distribution down south in a lot of states still doesn't happen. It's not a happen. The wholesalers are afraid that self-distribution is going to disrupt their business. Right now, the tap room is under attack everywhere. Texas right now, believe it or not, in Texas, breweries can't sell beer to go. It's a thing. But distilleries can, cideries can, and wineries can. Breweries cannot. The wholesalers are fighting them. So there's laws like that where they're backroom deals because money talks, you know, and there's a lot of that still going on. In Texas, you know, even in Michigan, franchise, you know, here you can get 5 branch offices. Breweries can. So Jason can have his brewery, but he can open up a tap room up in Rochester, you know, his home or whatever if he wanted to. If he wanted to do that, he could. He could do 5 of them. In Michigan, they just passed a law in the association compromise with this. You actually have to have a brewery in every location. Here, it can just be a tasting room. So, I mean, you can just do a lot of things here that you can't do in other states.
Yeah. Jason, anything that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's you're starting to see people, because it's been around for a little while. Everyone was just getting their things off the ground, just their original breweries. But you can see this more and more. People are starting to kind of creep up and play around with an extra location and do a tap room other places. And, you know, it's stuff that we're thinking about as well. But it's you know, now that you've had a couple of years under the belt, we can start thinking about other ways to progress. And that's one way rather than necessarily.
So let's clarify. So it's New York State Farm Brewery License.
Yeah.
You can have up to 5 satellite.
Branch. Yeah, correct. And so other half is a great example of that. They just opened a huge facility up just south of Rochester, upstate, you know, and because it's so much more affordable for them upstate, they can, you know, buy it, put it in a big brewery, and they can they could probably make beer up there easier and ship it down here, you know, cheaper than having it here. And they're going to keep both locations, but it works for them. And there's a lot of other breweries that are doing. Single Cut has a huge facility upstate from Queens, and so it really helps breweries. You get to a point with some breweries, and they can only make so much money out of their tap room. So what do you do? Distribution isn't always the answer anymore because there's no more shelf space. There's no more tap handles. You know, distribution model is, as our friend Matt says all the time, would you rather make $5 a pint or $5 a case, right? So distribution is a tough model right now. So how do you expand? And you probably, like, I'm sure you look at it, Jason. Like, what do you do? So a branch office might be, you know, an office. I can open a brewery somewhere else in a populated
area.
So
literally, I if I was a New York farm brewer, like Jason, I know Big Alice has done this, or Rockaway.
Yep.
So what can you do, Jason? You can literally, you have your brewery in your neighborhood.
I mean,
you could open another neighborhood, just a room, and set up a tap.
I can kind of, you can do just a, I could open up a small 400 square foot tap room on Court Street in Carroll Gardens or Cobble Hill or something like that. And, you know, just serve our beer there. Or I can also serve other New York State wine, spirits, and ciders.
Farm,
which is part of the license benefit. But yeah, I could open up across the state. I could open up 5 additional locations that are just tap rooms, or I could also put in other systems as well, so I can brew in other places. I mean, it gives you a lot of flexibility and a lot of ways to create a unique and kind of a dynamic business plan to you know, get your beer out there, rather than saying, okay, I'm just going to grow to a you know, 10,000 barrels of beer and try to get that all out. Like,
Stefan, is this, these are issues that you have to deal with?
All the time.
So let me ask you a question. This is my question. Going, I have 5 years of questions on this. So the first part is, let's say I have a New York State farm brewery license. I have a brewery in New York State. Mm-hmm. And my friend has a farm property on a busy road in a county outside of New York City. Mm-hmm. Can I get a satellite license to put up a tent and a jockey box and a porta potty? Is my license that easy just to set up like that?
Not quite that easy, no. There are still the requirements. I mean, it's still called the Liquor Authority. They are still the ones that are regulating this industry, and they still have to laws, ABC law to follow. I mean, if you wanted to do that, you'd have to have a building that you would have to do that on. But it wouldn't have to be on a farm, by the way, though. A farm brewery does not have to be on a farm. There can be a farm brewery in Midtown Manhattan if they so choose. Farm winery is the only one that's required to actually be on a farm in an agriculture district. But yeah, there's still certain regulations you have to follow, of course. I mean, you're still manufacturing and selling alcohol to the public. So everyone needs to make sure they're following all the rules at all times. But it's become a lot easier than it was just a few short years ago.
Such a buzzkill.
And then going bigger. So right. since you've been on the scene, Paul, mm-hmm. The state really has gotten behind a lot of brewery expansions. You want to tell us about Empire in Syracuse? Didn't they open a new brewery in Cazenovia?
They did. I mean, they're a classic example of, you know, Empire's been around for a while, but and David Katleski was actually one of the co-founders of this association who owns Empire. You know, really kind of led the way of branch offices and the farm license, and is still on our board today. And you know, there's a lot of breweries like that are expanding, and the state government makes it easy to happen. That's the great thing about New York. And you know, everybody complains about New York and taxes and things. And one of the things we were able to pass is there's you know, there's a state excise tax of 14 cents a gallon for brewers, and that's fully rebatable for every brewer. So basically, they pay no state excise taxes. So these are some of the very favorable things that help the brewing industry in the state grow. Because one of the great things about brewers, and this is what we really hammer in Washington, D.C. and in Albany, is, you know, like, you put more money in their pocket. You know what they don't do? They don't buy cars. They don't go on vacations. They don't buy bigger houses. They buy new tanks. They hire people. I mean, and that's just what they do. And so they're putting back in the industry, and they're growing. And it's the great thing about the business.
Great. Hey, Jason, before we take a break, what beer are we drinking?
So what you had in front of you was Young Lion of the West, which is our cream ale. We actually just won gold for it at Tap New York.
Congratulations.
This past, last weekend?
Yeah.
Sometime.
It's a blur.
It's all a blur. Yeah. So that is a nod to my hometown, Rochester, New York, and the Genesee Cream Ale. So that was one of our first beers that we ever made.
Great. Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. Patina is also the exclusive caterer at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe overlooking Lilypool Terrace. Executive Chef Morgan Jarrett's unique menu offers warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're talking the state of New York State craft beer. You know, we're talking about different things, laws, how the industry is involved in everything with Jason from Strong Road Brewery, Paul Leone from the New York State Brewers Association, and Stefan Fleming from Empire State Development. I was fantasizing about, you know, just taking one of these farm brewery licenses and opening up a tent-side brewery satellite office on a highway somewhere. So you can't. It's not that loose.
It's not quite that easy. No, it's one of those misconceptions sometimes that things become easier, but there's still rules you got to follow. So, you know, it's again, I hate to be a buzzkill, but yeah, there are rules. There's still the Liquor Authority. They are charged by state, New York state government to oversee these things.
But the licensing for a branch office is not a difficult license.
No,
or a difficult application to fill out and you know, apply for.
Exactly. So. And it's something that I have to credit Governor Cuomo. I have to credit the former chairman of the Liquor Authority, Dennis Rosen, and the current chairman, Vince Bradley. They have worked so hard to work collaboratively with me at Empire State Development, with Paul, with all of the industry association heads, to work with the industries to make it easier to get applications and permits processed faster, to make it easier. I mean, you know, it's pretty amazing the sea change that has happened over there.
So this was basically what you guys have been through, was the first real overhaul of New York State liquor laws since Prohibition ended, pretty much, right?
Yeah. I mean, without question. I mean, I think that the first version, or the 2003 version of the New York State Brewers Association, that was their sole focus, was how do we change the laws and fix things here in New York State? And really, really give a lot of credit to the wine industry. You know, I mean, they laid the groundwork for a lot of, we've just copied what they did and applied it to beer. And so, you know, we owe a lot to the wine industry as well in New York State.
That's great. And where can you see it going? I mean, New York is almost like the shining light now, where we've gone and changed these rules from after Prohibition. Tell me more about other states. Like, what's other state directors are asking you, Paul? The interest that people have in seeing what we did in New York.
Well, we'll never be number one because California has 1,000 breweries, right? So I don't think we'll ever get there.
But one day it'll be split up into two states, right?
You know, cheering, we're number two. If we're number two in economic impact and number of breweries, that's pretty darn good because we'll never be number one, and I think that's okay with that. I think my guesstimate, and who knows, I think, you know, we could reach 500 breweries in New York State at some point and be okay. Because of the vast number of breweries that are opening right now are Jason's size. You know, they're just the size where they service their tap room and their little neighborhoods that they're in. That's sustainable. And there's a lot of New York's a big state. It's a really big state. And so there's a lot of room for growth. I think as an association, and this is what I lose sleep about a lot, and this is why we have a board of directors and we talk about these things that Jason is on, is, you know, how do we make sure we maintain this and there's not mass brewery closings, and how do we take care of things? And we don't know yet. This is unprecedented, Jimmy. I mean, we were talking about it, Stefan and I were talking about it from a historical perspective. From a historical perspective, we've never seen this, right? I mean, and in the most breweries in New York State ever, was in 1876, and that was 383 breweries. We're at 447 now, so this state has never seen that. And back then, it was a population of 5 million. We have a population of 20 million now. So we can continue to grow. For the association is how do we maintain that in a sense where we make sure breweries make smart decisions, make good beer, you know, because pretty soon, if they make crappy beer, they're not going to stay open. And I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't know how you feel about it as a board member.
I mean, I think for me, I think one of the biggest things right now is that, you know, we have, you know, with over 400 breweries in the state, that's a huge amount, and we can go up to 500. Maybe we can go up to 600. I don't know. But what I'm more interested at this point is gaining the market share of consumers back to drinking craft beer. Some states, and I don't know, maybe Paul is better with these numbers, but like Vermont and Oregon.
Vermont has, they have a 40%. So 40% rating where Vermonters are supporting their beer. 40% of the population is drinking Vermont beer. In New York State, it's around 7%.
Oregon's in also
New York State
really,
beer, not Vermont beer.
Oregon's really good at drinking their own beer.
Yeah.
Right, and correct. They're loyal to their beer.
And unfortunately, I mean, we have so much amazing things going on in New York, not just beer, all across, not even just the beverage sector, just the farm, like just everything. And then there's so much going on, and yet it doesn't seem that the drinkers have that much pride in what is going on here. And you know, I don't know if that's I don't know why that is. And I mean, I have some guesses, but it, you know, if it, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to sound worse than I am, but I think New Yorkers are spoiled in the sense that we can get whatever we want here in New York State, right? There's just like such variety of everything. And from an association standpoint, I think we want to focus them a little bit more. We always say, drink what you want to drink. It's fine. Drink what you like, but think local first. These are small family businesses, and there's a lot of great beer. And I think that's kind of our messaging with our Think New York, Drink New York, our New York craft beer app, things that we're doing like to help find breweries in New York State, like make it easier and really market New York State beer.
And that will help with the amount of breweries that we have, like all of our breweries, like us being small and, you know, like you said, hitting our local neighborhood. All the breweries in the Finger Lakes, in the Central Region, Hudson Valley, the Adirondacks, up into the Western New York area. Like everyone is starting to see it, and it's much more available and people will be coming. So it's, you know, if we can kind of keep pushing that narrative and start getting people into more craft beer, New York craft beer, that would be.
You know, Paul, I think the Governor's Cup is. Mm-hmm. I think it's the reason I actually come on the show is that the fact that you have a rigorous. I mean, do you feel like the Governor's Cup was a pretty rigorous competition this year, Jason?
Yeah, I didn't win one. I didn't win
any. You won last year, though.
I won last year.
Right. But that just goes to show how tough it is.
No, like, it's,
I think ultimately you have to set standards because, okay, there's a lot of breweries, and I think that now everyone knows about making a good technical beer, a clean beer. Let's talk about that. Like, really, how can we showcase? I mean, I told you already, not too long ago, people only talked about wanting a Russian River in New York.
Right.
And then it was everything in Vermont was great. But now, really, not just in New York City, but in the region, people are dying for, you know, collectible beers that are made in New York.
So I just have one comment to say about that. I think that, you know, I can't play favorites in my chair, but when I look at the New York State beer scene as a whole and I look at what's happening in New York City, and it's not just because I'm here and Jason's here and all of that, but I think that what's happening in New York City is really some of the best beer in the state being brewed here. And I think that, I mean, there's a lot of great regions. Hudson Valley's doing great, Western New York. There's really great regions, but I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is from my chair, but I feel like if a brewery opens up in Brooklyn, especially, this is where the vast majority of breweries are, Brooklyn, Queens, and so you got to make sure if you open, you're going to succeed, you better brew really good friggin' beer, because if you don't, you're not, because the standard is so high here, everybody's making such great beer, you cannot get away with opening a brewery that makes average beer, because people won't go, and I think that is like at Asheville. So you go to Asheville, every brewery in Asheville is amazing. You go to Brooklyn and Queens, every brewery is amazing. Like everybody's doing, and if they're not amazing, they're being driven by the breweries that are making amazing beer. Like they get it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. And, you know, the thing about the city is that, you know, there were a number of breweries when it was much smaller, and you had a contingency of both brewers in the commercial scene, but also home brewers that all kind of came up together at the same time. And we pushed each other in each of those individual levels, and we all grew out of that. So there was a large period of time, or a small period of time, where a lot of really good brewers all kind of came up at once. You know, Finback, KCBC, us, Other Half, and a handful of people out of the Kelso brewery.
Right.
Just a lot of brewers and just a lot of talent. And, you know, and then that kind of dispersed, and it kind of dispersed these seeds and stuff. So it's just like it keeps growing and just good stuff.
It's amazing. And let's jump back to Stefan. So Stefan, kind of the official more state. So you work for this Empire State Development. Is that a New York State agency, or is it like a separate agency?
Empire State Development is the economic development arm of the governor's office of New York State government. And so my position was created actually by Governor Cuomo for my predecessor, Sam Filler, who is now the executive director for the New York Wine and Grape Foundation. And it was created because there was a lot of questions when people were trying to get started, when they were trying to get licensed. They would call up the State Liquor Authority or the Department of Environmental Conservation or any of the agencies that they needed to work with to get licensed, and they would ask the same question five times, talk to five different people, and get five different answers. And that's no way to do business. So to try and streamline the whole process, the governor created the one-stop shop. And for people that are looking for, they're looking for answers to their questions, they're sometimes just looking to talk to somebody. Having somebody to be able to call them and ask them a question, that's what my role is.
What are some typical questions that you get? It can be weird, but
lately it's around brand label registration. But I got to be honest with you, I get a call. I've been in the job for, next month will be 3 years I've been in this job. I get a call once every now and again, twice a week, from somebody saying, "I want to start a brewery." And as we've gotten closer to the 400 number, as we've eclipsed the 400 number, as we're getting very close to the 450 number, I keep on thinking to myself, well, you know, these calls are going to taper off at some point. They don't. They haven't. I'm still getting calls to this day. Even today, I got a call. Hey, I'm looking to start a brewery. What do I need to do to go through the process?
And I just want to empathy. I'm calling him a buzzkill, and I'm giving him a hard time. But but this just goes to show the foresight of what's going on in New York State. He makes my life so much easier. There's nobody like him that exists in any other state. All of my counterparts have to figure it out for themselves. They have to be the conduit. There's not always a friendly state liquor authority. And the fact that I have Stefan to turn to and say, look, I don't have the answer to this question. Can you get it? And he gets it as quickly as he can. Like that can't be understated. Like what he does is so valuable to me and to every, like to the cider and to the, you know, distilled spirits and wine industry, that seriously, you're a buzzkill, but you're really helpful. So thank
well,
you.
Well, then no, you're good. Thank cheers you, to you. But let's go back okay, there's things that you can be helpful with, but I'm thinking about you, the state's come so far, but still in certain counties and local ordinances, there's guys opening a brewery that are getting hiccups.
Yeah.
How do you interact with that? Are you guys trying to educate county health departments? I hear about septic systems a lot.
Yeah.
Getting a gas line installed, things that are very local.
Yeah. The local ordinances are really, really hard for us to assist with, for us to have any real impact on, because the way our system of government is set up, you have local control, and a local town, a local city or village can say, we want this, we don't want this. And the craft beverage manufacturers need to work within those confines. The state will be very hesitant in most cases to reach out to a town or village and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's unfortunate. There are some areas in the state that just, you know what, they just don't want this, or it's an entrenched kind of old political system sometimes in these different towns, and there's nothing we can really do about that, unfortunately. But there's a lot of towns and there's a lot of cities that are happy to have these people come manufacture alcohol in their locale.
And before, I heard you mention talk about expanding breweries that are in like industrial buildings. Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to go up to Equilibrium on your way back up state?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's one
of the places. Yeah, do you want to talk about that brewery or any other breweries like that that are?
Yeah, so I actually haven't been to Equilibrium yet, so I can't quite comment too much. But I one of my favorite things about the craft beverage revolution is that New York State is such an old state with such an old industry. We've gone through really, really good times and really, really tough times. And there's a lot of old infrastructure in this state, and there's a lot of old buildings that are brick, and they have these large wooden beams, and they have these really, really tall ceilings and loading docks. And oh my God, that's perfect to put a brewery or a distillery in. Yeah, it sounds perfect to put one of these places in. And again, I mean, I go to a place like Newberg Brewing Company, you know, up there in this old building that's clearly well over 100 years old.
Right on the Hudson.
Right on the Hudson. I mean, you know that building has so much history to it. And you go out there and you hang out, and on a random Tuesday night, there's 100 people sitting in their tasting room doing trivia night. And then they're walking around to some of the shops, and now suddenly that neighborhood is starting to become a more walkable place, and the city takes notice, and they start investing in that neighborhood, and it really starts to build upon itself in a lot of different ways, and you're finding examples of this all over the state.
Jason, if you were going to open a satellite brewery somewhere, a brewery office, you know, are there places you've considered or any
Rochester,
any you know, roadblocks that you've talked about that might come up?
Yeah, I mean, we're
or is it just money and finding a space, or are there other things you have to consider?
Yeah, you know, we're actively looking. I don't want to say where just at the moment, but yeah, I mean,
where?
Outside of the city, okay. I'll say
right,
that.
There you go.
We have ideas, and yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was going to say, it's like opening up in the city was very different than up trying to, you know, even open up just a small tap room in other places, and, you know, because you have to consider the locale of where you are, especially like if you're in something like the Finger Lakes or somewhere where you're like closer to watersheds that are a little bit more protected, parks and stuff. Like, I don't have to deal with that in, you know, in Gowanus, because the Gowanus Canal is not a protected water site. Right. So it's like you have to think about.
It's becoming called the Brooklyn Riviera.
It's lovely at night. You should go and just hang out there. I mean, there's a lot happening down there, and there's a lot going on, and they have the whole cleanup going on at the moment, you know. Or I'm just talking about Gowanus now at this point, but yeah, if you're going out, you have to really understand kind of the area and what you're trying to accomplish there. You know, does it make sense to, you know, are you, what's the size of your tap room? Like, just know where you're going and know what you're trying to do, and know, you know, really understand the market for it. Like, is it, you know, if you're someplace that's transient, will they be more interested in doing beer to go, or do they want to sit and have pints? You know, just understand, just like you're opening up in a regular brewery, you're going to be opening up a bar. Yes, it's your beer, and yes, you're selling it directly to consumers, but you're opening up a bar. Does that bar need to be in that space? What do you need to make that bar successful? What are you trying to do with that branch office? So, like, you know, just you've got to understand all the kind of minutia of actually opening up another business.
So. That's great. And back, Paul, mm-hmm. You're here in New York for a meeting with some of the
New York City brewers. Yeah.
Tell us about that meeting and how you interact with them.
You know, I have the coolest job in the world, but it's not visiting breweries all over the state, unfortunately. It's mostly an office job. So what we do is these regional meetings where we try to get all the brewers to come to us, because it's easier that way. So we have a meeting with all the New York City brewers, and we come and we kind of update them on the industry. I tell them what's going on with the association, what we're doing, all the things that's happening, and Stefan talks about the other, you know, the industry, the government side of things, and things that they should be doing if they're not doing, and it's just a way for us to keep in touch with the industry.
Give me a brief. So, what a few things you're going to tell the brewers tomorrow, and then Jason's going to tell me a couple of the brewers that are going to be there.
Yeah. So tomorrow I'm going to talk about some issues that are facing the industry right now, and I thank Paul and the Brewers Association for not only being such great partners, but for inviting me to come to all these regional meetings. I can't always make them, but I try to make as many as I can, because there's really no better way than getting out there and just talking directly to people and saying, hey, here's what's going on, here's what's facing you. You know, some of the issues, like I said earlier, are brand label registration. You got to have every brand that you make registered with the New York State Liquor Authority. There's things like the 5 cent deposit on the cans, so you can return the cans for the 5 cents. One of the new things in New York State is every business has to do sexual harassment training. You know, there's a host of issues that are important and are required for every business, and ones that are required for every business that manufactures alcohol in New York State. And being able to get out there and make sure that everyone's on the same page, it's really very helpful to me.
And a quick, since you mentioned it, the 5 cents on a can and bottle, where does that money go? I know when I get an order from a distributor, I was paying 5 cents a bottle. Where does that money go? Does someone keep track of it?
Oh yeah, every person that is a what's called a deposit initiator. Man, Jimmy, you're really getting into the weeds here. Every person that's a deposit initiator needs to collect that 5 cents and put that money into a dedicated account, and then they need to file a quarterly report with the Department of Tax and Finance. And if there's any money or any cans that get returned, the money needs to be paid out of that account to the people that return those cans. And any money that's left over, a certain amount of it gets remitted back to the Department of Tax and Finance, and the brewer gets to keep the other portion of that money that's left over in the account.
I always wondered about that. There's a good cottage industry of people going through the garbage in New York City, picking up the 5 cent bottles and bringing them to the grocery store.
Well, that's so, just the thing.
That's the byproduct.
Yeah, it's about getting more people to recycle the cans and to not just throw them in the trash. So there is a method behind the madness.
But no, that is amazing. I've always wondered that. And Jason, which brewers are going to be with you tomorrow getting this presentation?
Yeah, we've got a good portion of the brewers in the city coming through. KCBC is going to be there. I think we have representatives from Finback, Threes,
Bridge Rockaway,
Bridge and Tunnel. A bunch. I mean, they're very, they're active and they want to be part of it too. So it's good to see them get out there.
And last question for Paul. So you
have a question for you, so don't let me slip away.
You'll get it.
All right.
New York State Brewers Association.
Yeah.
You have that, but then there's also the New York City Brewers Guild.
Correct.
How do you interact with that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yeah, it's a really great question. So basically the City Guild, we're a big state association. New York City is a big city. They need their own guild to kind of maintain their own things. There's a Long Island guild, and we're perfectly good with that. We just have really great relationships, and we're really tight. We work together.
Great. Well, we're going to wrap it up soon, Paul. Did you have a question?
I did. You're a bit of an institution, Jimmy, in beer, and so you're asking all of these questions for us, especially as a New York City guy. And you recently went upstate, and you explored, upstate. How have you seen things change? I mean, really, I think you're listening to us talk, but you've been around a long time in this industry. How have you seen things change?
I think, those of you guys in the room probably know more about it than I do, because just going back to 2005, when I opened Jimmy's Number 43, mm-hmm. there were four breweries in New York City, and there was a new one called Six Point. It wasn't really until this Craft Act in 2014 that things really, really changed. And I think what we tried to do before that, now I can't keep up with the breweries, but 2008, 9, 10, any new brewery, we were trying to recognize, as retailers and as media, we can create quality levels. We wanted to find the best brewers. We wanted to see which breweries would want to work with local grains and local malts at certain events. And so I feel like that I've always seen the brewers in New York State respond and the state as well. And I went to the 2014, the Governor's Craft Beverage Summit, and I was really impressed with the state of the industry then. And I still can't believe how far it's come. But
when you went upstate too and you did the show, right?
Yeah, we did the show in 2016 on the road with Beer Sessions Radio. We went to four regions. We went to Hudson Valley, where we got to hang out with the guys like Suarez and Plan B, who are pretty famous now. We went out to Finger Lakes. We went to Catskills, and we also went to the Capital District with Indian Ladder. But I'd like to say, on that note, we did a recent episode with Common Roots Brewery. Mm-hmm. And as you guys know, they had a big fire in March. That, to me, was seeing how far the industry's come. Because just in their region alone, there were so many breweries. There's a company, Melanie of Fremdoffer Design, it's a long-time family business that does metalwork, is now making brewery systems that they're selling in the region and out of state, which not too many years ago, there wasn't a New York State-based maker of brewery equipment. So that's just one example. Or through Jason, all the different hop growers that I've met. We did a show not too long ago with New York hop growers and the malt facilities in New York. I mean, that's what I love. And so seeing the work that you guys have done is very satisfying for me, because there's a lot more interesting stories than there used to be. And I can't keep up with... I mean, Jason, how many malt facilities are there now that you buy from?
We only buy from about three or four at this point, but there are about, I think, a dozen malt houses.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. There's 12 malt houses.
Because I'm perfect. Right, so
you are. That's
the 12 tribes of Jason.
The fact that he says he uses three or four, that they didn't exist a few years ago. So that's a pretty good testament.
Yeah, I mean, we do it because we found the ones that we like, and we are trying to replicate the recipes that we've done. So there's a reason. I mean, not that the other ones aren't doing good stuff. It's just that we've found the ones that we like to work with. But I know people in all other parts of the state that are working with those other great maltsters, and you know they're small, so they can get most of their stuff to these, you know, with the local breweries. So
yeah, this is great. Well, Paul, I'm so glad that we connected. The next time you're in New York, we're going to do another show to keep
it's always
this
good
going.
To see you, seriously.
Thank you. So big thanks to Stefan, Paul, Jason, and our good buddy Danny Brookett's here, who's one of my favorite brewers in New York. He's helping out at Circa now.
He's got to stop. He's like,
hey.
So thanks. Big shout out to everybody. Producer Justin Kennedy, assistant producer Leah Paps, engineer Matt Patterson. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thank you. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.